First of all,
this is the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
It might be cool, I don't know. And if it's not, I don't care.
The BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Bill Simmons works for ESPN. He's also named the sports guy, and he writes a comical sports column. He must be a popular dude.
The BS Report.
It's got a real dirty sound, like a rusty steak knife cutting through a well-aged steak.
Now.
Here's Bill Simmons.
Welcome to the show. Before we bring in Cousin Ty, I want to say we were named one of the best of 2007 new podcasts on iTunes. I couldn't tell if there were rankings or not, but it seemed like we were number two. Although they didn't rank them numerically, but because we were second in the order, I'm going to claim number two. So very excited about that. And we were also named one of the best new podcasts that didn't have a sponsor. So that was also very exciting. Let's bring in Cousin Sal for the Week 15 line. Sal Iacono from Jimmy Kimmel Live, which is a show that shows in reruns on ABC currently. Sal, are you there?
Yes, Jimmy Kimmel Live ranked the number one podcast, I think, of 2007. It hasn't been on the air forever.
What's yeah. Bill? Do you miss it? You must miss it.
I do. I miss the, you know, I miss the social aspect of starting trouble on the staff.
Right.
You know, we could never put a show on again. It would be fine, but I really need to start trouble.
Well, plus you love being trapped in a room with like 15, 20 people and farting on them and flicking their ears when they're not looking, stuff like that. What do you do? Do you go to like Starbucks and do this now?
No. I forced my friends to go to Las Vegas and stay with me in a hotel room for the Hatton Mayweather fight. And,
yeah, let's recap that. So we go to Vegas and we stay in this room in the Palms that was like part of a suite, and then we had a connecting door to the other room. So we're staying with two other people, one of whom is our friend Dickie. And Dickie and our other friend Ace go to bed early. Now, Dickie has a choice. We have three beds. There's one king-size bed, a couch, and then another room with two separate beds. And the smart move would have been for Dickie to grab one of the beds in the other room and probably try to sleep in the same room with you. Instead, he's so terrified of you that he goes into the other room, sleeps on the couch, and they double lock both of the doors so there's no way we can get in. Were you honored by this, or did you were you disappointed that you couldn't torture
him? I was a little. You know how it is with me. As long as one person is more outraged than I am, I think it's funny. And
yeah,
you were going crazy trying to get in that room.
I didn't have a mattress cover. He took the mattress cover, and then I was stuck in a room with you. So it was like a double whammy for me. Let's tell the Bruce Buffer story.
Yeah, it's not often where you could be arm's distance away from both Angelina Jolie and Bruce Buffer.
Yeah, in the same. Well, first of all, we go to the Mayweather-Hatton fight, and even for a boxing match, that was a ton of celebrities, didn't you think?
Yeah, sure. Denzel and Angelina and Brad, like I said. And,
Bruce Willis.
Mike Stallone, Bruce Willis, yeah.
Wesley Snipes,
mm-hmm.
Charles Barkley. I think my favorite wrinkle was Tommy Hearns and Sugar Ray Leonard sitting next to each other.
They were there, right? Yeah.
They're sitting next to each other.
Wow, yeah. And Michael and Leon Spinks have almost become one person. It's hard to tell which one's which is not good news.
Both of them they're equally deranged.
Yeah.
And then who else? We had Mara Lopez, Mark Cuban, Wade Newton.
Rock was there, Gwen Stefani.
Right. Yeah, it was a star-studded event. And, you know, we leave the fight and we think, you know, wow, we've reached the celebrity apex. And then you and I are at a 1-3 no-limit poker table at the Palms at 2 in the morning, and a guy sits down with one of those shirts that, like a designer shirt that has the drawing on it.
Yeah.
And I kind of looked at him, didn't really notice him. And then everybody else at the table starts getting excited. It turns out it was the Frank Stallone of ringside announcing, Bruce Buffer. And
Michael Buffer's brother, right?
Yeah. Who, when I say that he couldn't have been more pleased with himself, that's an understatement. And there was a couple UFC fans at the table because there was also a UFC event at the Palms that night.
Yeah, right.
And so these UFC kiss-ass fans start kissing Bruce Buffer's rear end while Sal and I are sitting there trying to play poker, and I don't think either of us got a good hand for like an hour.
No, it was brutal.
And then so what happened was Bruce, you know, you think he'd be humble. He's you know, the black sheep brother in the Buffer family. Oh, no. Not humble at all. Talks about basically, like, almost like he was a Svengali.
Yeah, he was the mastermind behind Let's Get Ready to Rumble, which I don't even know if I'm allowed to say on a podcast or anywhere without having to pony up $50, right?
Yeah, you know what? I'm afraid. We might have to send Bruce a check if we keep saying it. So his brother Michael has a phrase that we're afraid to say because we don't want to have to pay them money when we say it. But Bruce was claiming at the table that not only was it his idea to trademark the phrase, but he runs Michael's career. Michael owes his career to him, basically, was the gist of what he was saying. And also, that phrase has generated $400 million, he claimed.
That is such that's the biggest bluff he made all night, I would have to say.
Yeah.
$400 million? How could that be? And he's wearing this hand-drawn shirt?
Yeah.
And then 1-3 no-limit table?
Oh, wait, it gets better. So after the $400 million thing, some people were like, I guess somebody seemed surprised, which Bruce didn't like, and Bruce proceeded to tell us that it was the most famous phrase uttered by a living person.
Yeah.
And
which
actually,
they didn't want to kill both the Buffer brothers right there, just so they wasn't able to make that claim.
But, well, the problem is that we couldn't come up with a more famous phrase uttered by a living person, so he might be right, actually.
How about them apples or
yeah, that's true.
I don't know anything.
I guess he meant like an identifiable phrase, but I would still go with like the tribe has spoken from Survivor or something, right?
Oh yeah.
That's got to be a little more famous.
How about them Cowboys? Is that your final answer? We could come up with a bunch.
Yeah. Well, Bruce thought it was the most famous phrase ever. Yeah. So then, you know, he gets a phone call and he's got to make this personal appearance at Tryst, which he's getting $1,000 for, that he proceeds to tell us at the table that he's getting $1,000 for. And the losers at our table were totally impressed by this. And meanwhile, he had just told us they had generated $400 million. So it's like, so.
Yeah, this is like you and I, someone telling us, hey, someone left 75 cents in the Wheel of Fortune slot machines if you want to go get it. Disturb your poker game.
Yeah. So he's worth $400 million. This phrase has generated $400 million, but he's going to Tryst at 2 in the morning for $1,000 for a personal appearance. So it's like, are you rich? Are you not rich? Nobody knew. So anyway, after he announced the 10-minute thing, I knew that he was going to try to steal a hand. And as it turned out, he, you know, it was one of those hands where everybody anteed $3. There was like 7 people, and he was the last person who could have anteed. And he upped it to $30. And I think I had an ace-8. And I had been losing for about an hour, but I was like, screw this. And I went all in. I went all in with like $75, head-to-head with Bruce, and I took him down. And it was one of my favorite gambling moments ever.
Good
Sal, you were there.
Buddy. That was nice. That was nice. I couldn't tell exactly what was going on because I was still scratching my head over the $400 million figure, but you did take him down.
I did take him down, and he left about 2 minutes later. But really the highlight of the trip, I thought, other than Mayweather just taking it to another level those last 4 rounds. What a sporting event that was.
That was great. I mean, that was the closest thing to a international soccer match we'd ever see, right?
Like, yeah. Yeah. And then, you know, it's funny. Everybody was kind of sort of willing to root for Hatton, even though he's not from America, because the fans were so great. And then they booed the national anthem and the gloves were off.
That was it. Yep. And then and to add to it, Floyd, who's usually a flamboyant, comes down the ring with mariachis and whatever, in a lion's costume or whatever.
Right.
Very, you know, very understated. Comes down to Born in the USA. I was a little disappointed not to see Wyndham and Rotundo following him. But it's like, all right, we could root for him, and I think we did.
Yeah, it was classy of him not just to come out to Born in the USA, but not to come out with like some sort of hybrid Born in the USA hip-hop version.
Right.
Which I was expecting when it started. I was like, uh-oh, here comes like somebody cutting in with like something. But no, he went straight Springsteen.
That was awesome.
Springsteen was probably confused by the whole thing.
Yeah.
Hey, let's get to the lines.
All right, let's do it.
Week 15.
I think I'm ahead 8 weeks to 6. I pick the lines ahead of time, what I think they're going to be, and then I write them down. I look them up on the internet, and now we're going to get Bills, and we're going to compare. And the winner I don't know, get something, a Super Bowl.
Winner gets something. Winner gets to sleep with Dickie in the same room and torture him on that.
Well, Bruce Buffer calls it, yeah.
Before we go to Week 15, incredible numbers from Week 14.
How so? Which ones?
The favorites were 14-2.
Oh, yeah. The favorite hasn't lost since the afternoon games, right?
And fortunately, we were in Vegas for the perfect storm where every favorite that you threw in a two-team, three-team, or four-team teaser ended up winning.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a lucrative day, I have to admit.
And the overs are starting to come in, too, at least on a teaser. I think there was like one. The Giants went under, and the Bengals game went under, which no one would have taken
right.
Anyway.
Well, unfortunately, normally what happens when the favorites are coming in this
yeah.
frequently and heroically is that there's usually the screw you week.
Yep.
Where everything goes wrong. Do you feel like this could be the week?
Sure, yeah. These casinos can't close down, right? So this is
right.
going to be a rough one. Although, God, I still say there are four or five teams, and we'll get to it, that have given up. So
let's save Pat's Jets for last because somehow have avoided seeing that line over the last 60 hours. I couldn't be prouder.
All right, we'll start with Thursday night, Denver at Houston.
Hmm. Interesting game.
Both 6-7 teams.
Yeah. Not totally out of the playoffs, although they probably are.
They both probably have to run the table, but and
need to run the table, need some help. I'm going to say Houston by 3.
Yeah, see, this is one of those that I was off by like 5 points. I said Denver by 2.5. It's Houston by 1.5. So you get that one.
Hmm.
I don't know why. I thought Vegas would like Denver more.
I don't
Wouldn't it be great
Denver
if team. Gary Kubiak accused Mike Shanahan of spying after this game?
Did you hear in Boston yesterday, one of the radio, Michael Holly on WEI claimed that the Pats confiscated a Jets camera from the sidelines last year but didn't turn them in?
Yeah, and the Jets are saying, if it's the same story, the Jets are saying they had permission to. This whole thing is getting so
right.
sketchy.
Oh, it's going to get sketchier and sketchier.
Saturday, there's a Saturday game on the NFL Network.
Oh, it's
too.
Great when they're the Saturday games when we're supposed to be Christmas shopping.
Here we go.
Yeah.
I think we're still going to have to go Christmas shopping. Cincinnati at San Francisco.
Oh, yep. Do the shopping. Cincinnati by 4.
Wow, you got, okay, wow, here's what happened here. I said Cincinnati by 4.5. You say 4, it's 9.5.
Holy mackerel.
I thought
you were going to say it was Cincinnati by 4 1/4. 9.5.
Isn't that insane?
Oh, my God.
I guess San Fran is one of those teams that just, well, Alex Smith is out. It doesn't seem to matter anymore.
Who's
though.
The quarterback for San Fran doing now?
What are they doing now with that?
I heard Dilfer was crying as he got wheeled off on Sunday.
He was crying?
Yeah, we missed that when we were at the ESPN Zone.
Oh, no. See, this is why we have to stay home. One thing's for sure, though. The cable systems, if they want to renegotiate with the NFL Network, they should do it after this game because they're going to get no ratings. It's not for fantasy football.
Hey, by the way, I gave away the ESPN Zone New York Casino Sportsbook secret yesterday in a Lynx column, and some people are very upset. They're saying it's one of the best kept
secrets.
Well, just that the New York Sportsbook is right next to the ESPN Zone. People are saying that I had just given away one of the best kept secrets.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
No, it really is. We had a great time. Shout out to Rex, who kept our Bloody Marys and iced teas filled. And
yeah, Rex was good. Rex was good.
That was nice. All right. Sunday, Tennessee at Kansas City.
Supposedly, Carl Peterson is now going around Kansas City with a bodyguard because he's been at. No, seriously. The
what?
GM? Because so many people in Kansas City are so upset with what he's done to the Chiefs.
Wow.
Yeah, that was interesting.
What did he do? Did he bang Larry Johnson's knee with a telephone book?
Yeah. I think it said he brought back Herm Edwards.
Yeah, I guess so.
But I guess he was such a blowhard in Hard Knocks that people took it personally.
Right.
I'm going to say, man, I don't like this Tennessee team at all. I really
don't.
They're
lousy. At some point, Jeff Fisher has to just start Kerry Collins, right? If Todd Collins is a starting quarterback, we could put Kerry Collins in there when Vince Young just can't move the chains at all.
Yeah, I mean, they 3rd and 7, it's useless. They can't do anything. I'm going to say Tennessee by 3.5.
All right, you get this because I said Kansas City by 1. I still thought they have the home field edge there. It's Tennessee by 4, so you get that.
All right.
All right, Seattle at Carolina.
Seattle's covered five straight.
Yeah, they're looking
unquestionably
good.
The hot second half team, I think.
They're looking good, and Carolina to me is like the worst team to watch. I mean, even worse than like the Rams and teams that have three fewer wins. I don't know.
It's funny. I watched Parcells on ESPN. They had, it was just two sleepers for the playoffs, and the first one was Seattle, and the second one was Minnesota. He was talking about Minnesota, and he's like, you know, I love all the stuff they do, blah 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 blah. The one thing I'm not sold on is their quarterback. I'm not sure he can make the plays in a playoff. It's like, really? I downloaded this and waited for a minute for Parcells to tell me he wasn't sold out to Boris Jackson.
Well, he's a genius quarterback-wise. I mean, brought in Vinny Testaverde and Drew Bledsoe, so you kind of got to go with what he says.
It's Seattle at Carolina, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Seattle by 9.5.
All right, I got this exact at 7. Seattle by that might be a good teaser game.
So, yeah, that does look like a nice teaser game.
Like the gambling. Buffalo at Cleveland. This is a game of the week. This is really the only one that means
that's a
anything.
Great game.
Yeah. Cleveland 8-5, Buffalo 7-6.
I'm gonna say Cleveland by 6.5.
Ooh, who gets this? I said 6 and it's 5.5.
Ah.
All right, so I take a 3-2 lead. Yeah, this is a good one. I think I want to take Buffalo here. I don't know why.
Yeah, it feels like comes down to the end of the game. You don't think they'd send Gus Johnson in that one?
No.
You don't think so?
I don't know. What do you think?
Well, I think that would be a good Gus Johnson game.
Yeah, that would be good. Oh, let it snow, baby.
Yeah.
Baltimore at Miami.
You know, that could be the one Miami gets.
Yeah, it's going to have to be. They plan on it.
You got Kyle Bowler. That's interesting. I think I'm going to take Miami in that one. I'm going to say Baltimore by 4.5.
Well, here's the thing. I said, you get that, because I said Baltimore by 5. And I just think at some point an 0-13 team can't be getting less than 6 points, right?
Yeah. What is it?
The Ravens, I'm sorry, I never even said it. It's 3.5.
Oh.
So you get that one. But the Ravens don't want to be the team to lose to Miami as much as Miami wants to, you know, get their one win. So,
yeah.
I don't know. Here we go with Green Bay at St. Louis.
Brock Berlin?
It's looking like it, yep.
Green Bay by 12.
Ooh, I said 10, and it's 9. They still respect that St. Louis team a little.
It's weird. It's like a hangover from 2000, even though the seasons aren't there's no correlation between the two teams.
Yeah. Jacksonville at Pittsburgh.
Steelers disgraced themselves. Even Damashek admitted it.
Did he talk to you? Did he ever call you back?
I went on his it was a congratulatory call with a catch that I had to call into his radio show to be congratulated. But he did admit that the Steelers were not classy down the stretch, which I thought was big of him.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's a tough one. I'm going to say Pittsburgh by 3.5.
You got it exactly. Yeah, I said 4. It's 3.
It's a nice game. A couple nice games.
I like that game. It's weird that people were talking about Jacksonville as like the Patriots' first round opponent already, you know?
Mm.
They're like, they'd have to go to San Diego, win that game. They'd have to hold on to that fifth slot, but
right.
It could be dangerous. Not to the Pats, but all right. Atlanta, Tampa Bay.
This Tampa by 9.5.
I got this exact. It's 12. I don't like them giving that many points, but
I don't like anything about that game. How about Atlanta? 2 Monday night games.
Terrible. Double-digit losses on Monday night. They shouldn't be off the schedule for the next 5 years.
I think
some mobsters had money on Atlanta, and they forced Bobby Petrino out because that's quite an exit for him.
That was interesting. Yeah, it was a little ignominious. I don't think Michelle Tafoya's voice could have gotten any more graver during that game. I mean, really, she was like, there were a couple points where it was like 12 players had been paralyzed at once. As she was doing her routine. That was a depressing season for them.
Yep.
Really, like, you can't get worse.
No, not even playing poker with Bruce Buffer at 3 in the morning. That's not even more. All right, Arizona and New Orleans. Both are 6-7. If either team got their act together, they'd be all right. They have easy schedules.
I feel like if New Orleans qualifies for the sixth seed, they shouldn't be allowed in the playoffs for the disgraceful way they've handled this entire season.
Yeah.
New Orleans by 4.
You get it. I said 5.5. It's 3.5.
Hmm.
So, they have they beat Arizona. They have Philly and then at Chicago. So they could contend with the Vikings down the stretch. Indy at Oakland. Now the 1:15 West Coast games.
Indy by 11.
You get that one too. I said 9. It's 10.5.
Oh, there are some enticing teasers this week.
Yeah, there are a lot. See, but this is where they screw you, right?
Potentially, yeah.
Detroit at San Diego.
That San Diego team makes me sick. They really do. What a garbage win. Detroit, the classic letdown game, right?
Boy, they are lousy. I mean, they were 6-2. They really could be 6-10.
Oh, I think it's going to happen. I'm going to say San Diego by 8.
All right, that's what I said. So we tie, but I believe it's 10.5. I'm checking now if it's changed. It opened at 10.5, so we'll go.
All right,
with
well,
that.
We split it anyway.
Right. It's 10 now. Philly at Dallas.
Dallas by 9.
You get this one too. I said 12. It's 10. Let me make a prediction here. Dallas Cowboys' next loss is in a meaningless game sometime next August.
Interesting. How dare you?
Next straight. I know.
Slap in the face to the Pats.
Plus, they're going to have their second string in against the Redskins. But, the Pats, we're not even really worried about.
Well, I did get you to admit in Vegas that if the Cowboys beat the Pats in the Super Bowl as like 13-point underdogs, mm-hmm. that you wouldn't rank it ahead or below the birth of your son, but you said it's at least an argument.
Well, I said that because I knew you'd repeat it, and the wife listens to this podcast. That's the only reason I said that.
No, you didn't. You said it would be number 2 behind the birth of your son.
Right.
Yeah.
Creeping up, though. It has potential to rise.
To pass it, depending on how excited the game is.
Sunday night, Washington at the Giants.
God, I hate this Giants team.
Yeah, I know.
They're so tough to figure out. Really an enigma. An enigma trapped in a riddle.
Giants by...
It's either 3.5 or 4. I'm going to say 4.
All right, you're rolling here. It's 4.5, and I said it was 6.5. I just thought they'd be favored by more at home. But I forget how bad Eli Manning is in Giant Stadium.
Nobody trusts him anymore.
Todd Collins on the road is a better bet, I guess. Chicago, Minnesota, Monday night.
Oh. Adrian Peterson, Devin Hester, the sequel.
Mm-hmm. Cowboy Bob Orton at starting quarterback.
And I'm going against the Bears defense in our fantasy league playoffs, unfortunately.
That's right.
I'm going to say Minnesota by 6.
Okay, I get this one. It's I said 7. It's 10. You believe that?
What?
The 6th seed in the NFC is giving the Chicago Bears 10 at home.
I don't agree with that at all.
I don't like it either. I hate to take the Bears, but
that's too high. That's too high.
And then let me just make sure you've won already. 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah, now you're up 9-7 with ties and everything. Jets at the Patriots.
Well, I said 25 in Vegas, so I'm going to stick with that.
All right, you get that one too. It opened at 24 and it opened at 27. I said 24, and it's 24.5 now. So we'll give that to you because it opened at 27. But who was betting the Jets that it opened at 27 and now it's 24? Really?
Yeah, who ran to the sports book and banged the Jets on Sunday night? That is a little strange.
How? Really? Honestly, though, the Patriots are going to score conservatively. They're going to score 42 to 49 points conservatively. The Jets are going to be held to less than 2 touchdowns.
Well, we also saw last week that any perceived slight they rally around, like this safety, the stupid second-year safety in the Steelers opens his mouth for 5 seconds.
Yeah.
They spend the next 4 days talking about it, and then specifically designing plays to humiliate him during the game. So what would they do to the Jets, you know?
I don't get this. I really don't get it at all. I mean, that's got to be our best bet.
Hey, last thing before I let you go.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, the car ride home from Vegas, which really should have its own documentary made about it.
Yeah.
You revealed in the car ride that it's common knowledge that we should tip the sportsbook people after we collect a bet.
All right. I don't know if it's common knowledge, but I say these people expect tips. I'm friends with a guy who works behind the sports checks tickets in the sportsbook. And he gets 40% of his salary off of tips. And, well, tell them what you did. Tell them what you made everyone do.
Well, with everyone wanted to get on the road on Sunday night, and it was a difference of about 10 minutes, and I wanted to collect my bets that I made because I had won all of my bets, and it happened so rarely in a sports book for me that I wanted the feeling of having the guy hand me a bunch of hundreds.
Mm-hmm.
So I made everyone stay, and then you were behind me in line, so I collected my money. I thanked the guy. Then you went. You collected your money, which was less, and then I think it was like $255 or something, and you left the guy $5. And I was confused by this.
You cash out at like $11.54 or something, and the guy is counting the money real slow and hands it to you real slow and is staring at you. And staring, and then I was like, oh, whatever, all right, if you're not going to tip him, I'll give him my ticket. And then I'm at like $244.25, and I give him the $4.25 and walk off. But, yeah, no, they expect tips. And let me tell you something, Bruce Buffer expects a tip, too, at the poker table.
Well, the thing is, I had never, ever seen anybody do that before, and I've probably been – you know, I've probably wagered at a sports book like 25, 30, 40 times. I don't even know.
Mm-hmm.
So when you left the $4, I was like, why did you? I just didn't get it. And then we argued the whole way home about whether the sports book people should be tipped or not.
Yeah, and but your biggest reason was that what did you say? Go ahead.
Well, your theory is that everybody who works in a casino expects to be tipped.
Pretty much.
So then that led to an argument about if I buy a pack of cigarettes at the Palms gift shop, do I tip the girl who gave me the cigarettes $1?
You could probably get away with not tipping her. You know probably what I'm talking about.
So,
on the floor there, yeah.
Right, you're saying on the floor, anybody who deals with money and gambling in any way expects to get tipped.
Mm-hmm.
My theory was that everybody who works in a sports book, like your buddy, has some sort of deep-rooted gambling problem and just wants to be involved with the action as money changes hands, and it's their way of gambling all the time, but not really, you know, they can't.
Yeah, all right, but what does that have to do with it? You wouldn't even look the guy in the eye because you're like, this guy's a scumbag, and I can't even.
That's not true. I totally looked him in the eye. I thanked him. I just had no idea I was expected to tip him. But.
Well.
So
I wish
that, anyway,
had the guy's name so you could apologize. But.
Well, the moral of the story is I'm going to start tipping the sportsbook people.
Oh, attaboy. Good.
I am.
Good.
I thought about it, and I think you're right.
Sports gambling gets a bad rap. You got to keep that commerce flowing, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And,
there you go.
You know, also those guys are sitting behind a cage and they're voiding bets and all that stuff.
Right.
But I'm also, because I'm tipping the sportsbook people, I'm also going to tip the people that cut meat at my deli.
Oh, good. All right.
I've always felt like they deserve tips, and there's never a jar or anything, so now I'm just going to give them money.
See, this is nice. And I should get a finder's fee from these meat cutters and these sports ticket handlers for turning you on to this new way of life.
Do you want to plug your friend?
Who's that? Which one?
Your friend who works in the sportsbook.
Yeah, my friend Harry. My friend Harry, he works at the Red Rock Casino.
Yeah.
You see him 4 days a week, and he's not shy about giving you a loser. He actually, Harry has a good story about it. I'll tell it real quick. You talk about tips. This is taking it to a new level. Harry gave this guy a tip in the Super Bowl, and the guy won like $25,000. And as a reward to my friend Harry, he took him to the Pro Bowl in Hawaii. And when he got there, there was one room, and this guy hit on my friend Harry the entire time.
He had to get his own room.
He had no money, and he was 6 hours away from civilization.
It was $1,000 tip. A negative $1,000 tip.
Exactly.
That's a classic. I continue to think that there should at least be a a reality show about people that work in a sports book.
That's not bad. It's not a bad idea.
It would be good. Or a reality show set in a sports book, like something. There should be something.
We got to work on it. When the writer's strike ends next November, that's first priority.
All right, I'm going to let you go.
All right, buddy.
Thanks, as always. Talk to you soon. All right, with the Mitchell Report coming out and the Johan Santana sweepstakes still going, I couldn't resist one more chance to call my buddy Jacko at work for the ongoing segment. Johnny, are you worried about the 2008 Yankees season yet? Let's give him a ring. And by the way, he's been ducking our calls. I think either he's been too busy for us or he doesn't want to talk. Let's see.
Hello, John O'Connell.
Johnny.
Hey, what's up, buddy?
I have some bad news.
What's that?
The entire 2007 Yankees roster is on the Mitchell Report.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Well, since he's a director of the Red Sox, that wouldn't surprise me. I'm sure we won't hear anything about Big Poppy, who was waived and then mysteriously turned into the best hitter in baseball overnight.
Come on, he was a pull hitter.
Yeah, that was it.
The Twins didn't realize it.
Right. Yeah, that's not too shady. It's bad enough that the ownership has Bud Selig completely in their pocket.
Big Poppy.
They were allowed to buy the team for like 20 cents on the dollar. You know, I think actually for $20. And now they have George Mitchell, their director, doing the steroid report. Wouldn't shock me at all.
How dare you. Yeah, it will be funny if the Red Sox that are on the report are all guys who are no longer on the team.
Yeah, right.
If it was like Nixon and Millar and
Nomar.
John Damon. Nomar.
Derek Lowe. That explains the Derek Lowe face.
How excited are you for the Mitchell Report on a scale of 1 to 10? Like a 20?
I don't know.
25?
I think it's one of these things where you get excited. I don't think it's worth getting excited for because I think it's going to be a letdown. It's like a big movie. You get fired up and then it's not that good. I think it'll be a lot of guys like middling guys that you never heard of, utility players, you know.
Like the David Segui types?
Exactly. I just think baseball has a vested interest in not completely decimating the sport where you're going to see like the entire all-star roster is on there, you know?
Yeah, but how could they – it's not like baseball can decide which guys make it and which guys can't, don't make it, right?
Well, if it was the NBA, David Stern could.
Well, that's true. Yeah, Stern would be like, why don't we cross LeBron off and let's take Steve Nash off there. And
I mean, they did give the report to Major League Baseball like yesterday, didn't they, or something? I mean, they've seen it ahead of time.
Yeah, that part was weird to me. Is how is it not leaked out yet?
But see, it looks like George Mitchell's bud. Hey, can we talk for a second? Just take a look at this report.
Is this the final report? Because I have some suggestions.
Because we've waited out a few. We'd like to fax it back to you. We think it looks better this way, right?
Yeah. It'll be interesting.
It will be. Yeah, I'm intrigued.
I love how the Orioles traded Miguel Tejada today.
Did they really? I didn't even hear this.
Yeah, they traded him to Houston for like five no-names, but just seems suspicious timing. Take him, anybody! Who wants him?
Wow. For five for prospects.
Well, I don't think they were five winner prospects.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think they were five of the greats.
Oh, yeah, that could be a red light right there.
But, so anyway, it's no use really talking about the Mitchell Report for that long because we don't know who's on it. We might have to have a special event podcast if the names are just too overwhelming.
Sure.
But the Johan Santana sweepstakes, amazingly, still going.
Yes.
Since the last time we talked. Now Peter Gammon seems to think that it's a waiting game and that the Red Sox still have the best offer.
I have a sixth sense that the Yanks are not completely out of the mix. There's all these reports about trying to trade Matsui because they want to cut down payroll for next year. And I just have the sense they're sort of like circling around the situation because it just makes too much sense for them to go get Santana.
Right.
I mean, this is one of those situations where they need as you always talk about, the vice president of common sense. They just needed a regular fan in there saying, we don't have an ace. We haven't had an ace in forever. Please go get an ace that's available. And these prospects are like, to me, like I said to you, they're like lottery tickets. You know, the lottery ticket could pay you $2 million, and it also could pay you nothing. So the Twins are like, we're going to give you $1 million right now for two-year lottery tickets. And then the lottery tickets might turn out to be nothing. And I'm at home screaming, take the $1 million, Yanks, for God's sake, sell the lottery tickets.
Yeah, and time and time again, it's proven. I think that, I was talking to Max Kellerman, and that is not a name drop, by the way.
Yeah, really.
I was talking to him at this party before the boxing match, and he is like the number one Yankee fan. and he's has an ESPN show in New York, and has been adamant for the past few weeks that they shouldn't give up more than Hughes, and that everybody forgets how good of a prospect Hughes was and how he had the no-hitter against Texas, and he got hurt, and he pitched hurt the second half of the season, and that's the only reason why the Yankee fans are like, yeah, okay, we'll give up Phil Hughes. But if we had actually seen him pitch healthy the whole 2007 season, there's no way they would have traded him. So he's saying that he thinks Phil Hughes is enough because he is the top pitching prospect in baseball, and that if you give up him and two other low-level guys, that should be enough for the Twins.
Well, I agree that the Twins got it a little greedy, and I think when they came back and asked for Kennedy, I mean, I know earlier I had said, oh, give him Kennedy, give him whoever they want, but in addition to Hughes. But, I mean, I think they did get a little bit greedy, and you can't completely give up two guys in your rotation, although I think I'd still be willing to do that. But
I thought they
allegedly got off of Kennedy, though, and they were just haggling over prospects. And to me, like, to worry about some middling outfield prospect who's never going to play for the Yankees. I mean, let's face it, if they need an outfielder, they're not going to bring up somebody from AAA. I don't care what his numbers are like.
Well, don't you think what happened is they probably agreed to the basic parameters a little bit, and then the Red Sox were like, uh-oh, they're going to get Santana. Hey, what if we threw in Ellsbury, but
never
really had an intention? And then the Twins were thinking, ooh, we can get this from the Red Sox. Let's go back to the Yankees. Hey, we'll throw in Ian Kennedy because we can. And then now it just seems like it's at this gigantic stalemate.
Right. Well, basically. I mean, I think, you know, the Twins' best hope was to play the Yankees off the Red Sox and see, ooh, maybe there's a way we can get Ellsbury and Lester, you know, or Hughes and Kennedy. I mean, that's why people kill Hank, and you know, that's justifiable, certainly. But that's where his deadline thing was good, because he wasn't going to be played with the pressure of the winter meetings and everything else.
But Gammon said the GMs didn't like the deadline.
Well, I'm sure they didn't. I'm sure the Twins GM didn't like it, because he couldn't play both teams off of each other.
Yeah.
Now, if the Red Sox get him, you know, I'm not going to be very happy, mind you, but I don't know. I just think it's an interesting situation. I think the Yanks might have been hurt by the fact that all the winter meetings happened the same week that the Jennifer Love Hewitt body image controversy broke. I think Hank's attention might have been elsewhere.
Hank!
Team called Hank, and he's like, Hank, did you hear there's pictures of Jennifer Love Hewitt in a bikini on the internet? Hank's like, really? What? Quickly blew off the Santana negotiations.
Cancel the Twin Talks.
I'm writing an angry letter to Us Magazine right now, Us Weekly. I can't be worried about Santana. How dare they say she's fat?
Well, someone who is also a size 2, I thought it was nice of her to stand up for me and all the other size 2 models out there.
When those pictures of you and your Speedo got on the internet, I know that caused you a lot of consternation, didn't it?
Yeah, I thought she looked pretty good, I have to say.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have any complaints about Jennifer Love Hewitt.
She had a little meat on her. It's nice for these women to have a little meat on them.
Absolutely. I hate when they're too skinny.
Yeah, everybody looks like a popsicle now.
Nobody likes the anorexic look. Just stop it already.
So your prediction, Santana, what happens and where does he go?
I think he's going to be a Yankee before the start of the year. I just have a feeling.
You don't think both of these teams are like, screw it, let's just wait till 2008, we'll sign him then?
Well, I don't think the Red Sox really have an interest in him. I think they're just playing around with the Yankees. They're in a perfect position to do that, and they're playing it perfectly. But, one, they don't need a starter. Two, I don't think they want to part with Ellsbury. And three, I don't think they want to be on the hook for paying Santana $20 to $25 million a year.
Right.
Because next year they have to replace Manny, and they haven't shown a willingness to have a $200 million payroll. So you're paying Santana $20 to $25, and you wonder, I mean, I don't know how much truth there is. People say, oh, Beckett will get his nose out of joint then and want to renegotiate. But you're going to have to pay somebody to take Manny's spot. That's not going to be cheap to, you know, either pay Manny or get somebody to replace him. So I think the Red Sox are fooling around, but I don't think at the end of the day, I don't think they really want him.
Mm.
I could be wrong. I mean, they would have a dynamite rotation, obviously, to say the least.
Well, I'll tell you this much. This decade, we have two Red Sox World Series championships to none for the Yankees.
Exactly.
And now we're in a situation where the Yankees are trying to trade for somebody and the Red Sox are screwing with the deal.
I know. The world's
it's a topsy-turvy world, Johnny.
The world's been turned upside down, my friend. It's a world I don't recognize. I wake up in the morning and the sky's a different color.
Yeah. There's no shows on TV. It's just reality shows because of the writer's strike.
That's right. It's It's all very troubling.
Hey, let's talk about the Tigers trade, because I loved your theory. You got to tell the world
well,
your theory.
The keystone of the trade was, well, first of all, this notion that Dontrell Willis, who had a 5.5 ERA in the National League, pitching to pitchers, like that was a great deal to get him in the American League.
Yeah.
I can't wait till he faces the Yankee lineup. His ERA might be 8, you know?
Yeah, he's going to stink.
And but the keystone of the trade was obviously Miguel Cabrera, who everybody talks about is the next A-Rod, but is 24 years old and looks like he ate A-Rod.
Right.
So you have that coupled with Edgar Renteria, who was so stellar in Boston and was kind of doughy in Boston. And originally my theory was just going to suggest this to the Cleveland Indians, who are their main rival in the Central, but now I've expanded it to the whole American League. I think the American League team should spend like $100,000 per game when the Tigers come to town on the visiting clubhouse post-game spread. And they should start setting it up before the game with like steak and lobster and like copious amounts of beer and desserts. And Miguel Cabrera will just be salivating and saying to Edgar like, "Oh my God, Edgar, did you see that cake?" And they'll be completely lost. He'll weigh like he'll weigh 275, 300 pounds by the All-Star break.
Didn't Ordóñez have kind of, he's kind of been up and down with his weight,
hasn't
he?
Absolutely. I could see those three of those guys. Now, I think it's probably a good thing to get Cabrera out of South Beach, because something tells me the nightlife in Detroit is probably not equal to South Beach.
Right.
So if he's like living it up and putting on weight that way, you know, a lot of like 3 a.m. diner breakfasts after late night at the club.
Yeah.
Probably not going to get that in Detroit. That's why you have to have this post-game theory, the post-game spread.
Well, if the other 14 GMs got together and they committed to some sort of budget, like 10 grand a game, that's like $810,000 total they'd split up between them, and they'd basically destroy the Tigers for the rest of the decade.
I basically want to hear stories about Gary Sheffield trying to restrain Miguel Cabrera from a buffet physically with a baseball bat. Saying, "Miguel, enough. No more cake."
Well, there has to be a way that... Isn't there a way that they could figure out, like, what Miguel Cabrera, like, what his favorite foods are? Like,
absolutely.
Maybe he loves, like, macaroons.
Right, there you go.
Just, like, just macaroons covering the locker room.
Right. So,
or maybe he loves, like, who knows, chicken fingers. I don't know.
They could have, like, a guy down in the clubhouse just, like, with a fan blowing out the aromas onto the bench while the Tigers are on the bench.
It would be funny if it worked and he weighed like 325 pounds in September. This is terrible.
The Tigers are like, the prospects that Marlins got turned out to be great. Dontrell Willis has an 8.5 ERA. They're using him as a pinch hitter just so they're not completely wasting their money. And Cabrera's huge.
I thought that trade, I told you this, but in the AL Keeper League I'm in, well, first of all, we had Andrew Miller. We had traded for last year, and now we lose him. And then Cameron Maybin was another top prospect, but I thought that was a ton to give up for, I guess basically just for Cabrera
right.
and the hope that Dontrell Willis might be good.
Yeah, I don't know.
That was the trade.
It could be great or it could be just awful.
Ugh.
I mean, that's a big question mark, you know? That's rolling the dice. Rolling the dice big time.
The other weird element to this, did you notice how much Miguel Cabrera and Miguel Ordóñez look alike?
They do.
I don't think two teammates have ever looked more alike than those two guys.
You think it'll turn out they're related, like on that Kansas City Chiefs, that HBO special where the two guys turned out to be cousins, the two receivers? They didn't know.
Yeah.
Derek Bowe and the other guy or whatever.
Dwayne Bowe and Bobby Scipio.
Exactly. It turns out they're cousins and they were living together.
Yeah, that's one of those things that has never happened to me at any point in my life.
Now, you and I are only children, so we only hope to find a long-lost sibling, but so far it hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's true. Hey, Johnny, I wanted to thank you for helping us become the number two best new podcast of 2007 or something on iTunes. Yeah.
What was number one?
It was an NPR show.
Jesus. My tax dollars have to go to that to beat you out. It's ridiculous. So by coming in number two, do I like get a free iPhone or anything from Apple?
I don't know. We're going to have to negotiate with you. Just don't hire Scott Boras.
I think what I might have to hold out in spring training until I renegotiate my contract. Or I could just threaten to pull the Bobby Petrino and resign and go work on an Arkansas podcast.
You can't renegotiate the contract. Yeah, I think you have to negotiate a contract.
Oh, yeah, that's a problem. I guess you can't renegotiate nothing, can you?
I think that would be interesting if you held out in spring training as stuff was heating up. It would, you know, the groundswell. Because we've got an email. You have at least 8 fans.
I do, across the country. They didn't like me so much in Cleveland, really, in the playoffs. But, you know, now that I've given them this Miguel Cabrera plan, I might get back in their good graces.
The Miguel Cabrera plan. And plus, you know, I think we're really the first people nationally to discuss in detail the Victor Martinez 25 handshakes for 25 players thing.
True. We broke that story. I think that's why you were number 2.
That could have been it.
I pushed you right up.
I just, you know, everybody is like talking about whether we should be afraid of the Tigers. I don't get it. Like, who's their closer?
Anytime Todd Jones and Kenny Rogers are key pieces of the,
yeah,
the key cogs in the machine,
well, then
I'm not really
Sumaya.
Stayed up late at night, you know?
They lost Sumaya.
Yeah.
They brought Edgar Renteria to the American League after that experiment already failed. They're playing Carlos Guillen at first base.
Right.
They're coming off, Ordonez coming off a career year that is never going to match again.
Right. They already had a good offense, and now their offense is maybe a little bit better. But it's like, okay, yeah, they were awful last year.
And Bonderman really wasn't that spectacular either.
As a Yankee fan, trust me, no Yankee fan out there has any confidence when the gambler is in the picture.
Right.
You know, I mean.
Also, he's about 50 at this point.
And Todd Jones could be a factor in that post-game spread theory as well.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't think of him. Maybe even Fernando Rodney.
Yeah, that's true. Good point.
He's a little beefy, too.
Right, right.
You know, the only person who's rooting harder for a Johan trade than us is, I think, CC Sabathia, who's
going to be a free agent, right?
Yeah, who's probably dying for Johan to establish the market, because all his stats are like within 90% of Santana.
And not to mention he beat Santana a couple different times last year head-to-head.
Right. And, you know what? That would be good if the Tigers signed him, actually, because then he could be in that post-game spread, too.
That's a good point. You know what? It's like that old Saturday Night Live skit, though, when it comes to CC, because that post-game resume ain't helping either.
No, it's not.
You know?
No. Although he did throw a lot of innings, I will say.
Yeah, and he was great in the regular season. So, yeah, somebody's definitely going to go out and pay a fortune for him.
What'd you think
not
of
the Yankees.
What'd you think of what the Angels did?
The Angels?
Yeah, they got
Torrey
Hunter.
What's his name? Torrey Hunter.
Yeah.
They overpaid a little for Torrey Hunter.
Yeah, a little high.
And they have 2 center fielders now, right? Because didn't they sign Gary Matthews Jr.?
It's unclear what their plan is.
That only makes sense if there was another move involved, but they haven't been involved in the Santana thing so far. They
right.
allegedly were going to get involved in the A-Rod thing, but never got a chance. That's a team that's always going to make a splash, and yet never really does.
Well, and then Vlad is one of those postseason guys who's never quite come through.
That team was pathetic against the Red Sox. They need another bat. They should have been on Tejada.
The guy that I'm worried about in the trade market that scares me is Eric Bedard, because I thought he was one of the best guys I'd seen last year, and it seems like he's at a relatively reasonable price and all that. I don't want the Yankees to get him.
Angelos won't trade him to the Yankees. He's not going to trade him to the AL East. He'll trade him to the National League,
you know,
probably.
I read that. It continues to confound me when people are like, nah, I'm not taking the best deal. I'm not trading. Like, why would you just not take the best deal for your team?
Yeah, if it makes your team better. I guess because you don't want to see the guy 19 times. Well, he's not going to pitch every game against the Orioles, but you don't want to see the guy 5 times a year come back and beat your team, I guess. It's a little too painful.
Yeah, but
it hurts too much.
That was the same logic why the Lakers didn't want to trade Kobe to Phoenix, even though Phoenix had the best deal. Just make the trade. Who cares?
I mean, ultimately, you're making a trade because you think it makes your team better, so you shouldn't really care if the other guy goes and is great for the other team, really.
All right, Johnny, let's cut the small talk.
All right.
Last subject. Mm. This real-world Sydney season has really been one for the ages.
It has. I think Isaac, you know, you talked about Gus Johnson healing the rift between you and Isaiah Thomas, which was brought a tear to all of our eyes, but maybe the most amazing mediator of all time might be Isaac from The Real World, because he went from a situation where those two girls decided they hated Parisa and were literally spitting on the phone booth just because she was in it.
Right.
Isaac comes back. Within like 5 minutes, they're all like, you know what? We hated that girl, Trisha, too. Sorry, Parisa. You're our friend again.
Yeah, that was amazing.
I think he and Gus Johnson could really solve the Middle East.
It was amazing. And it also proved, you know, for anybody who had any lingering doubt that women aren't crazy.
Yes. Ed Fickle.
Watching Kellyanne's 24-hour turn from spitting on the phone booth with with Parisa to then embracing her and apologizing for the way she acted.
Right.
I'm sorry I sided with our other friend in your blood war with her and then spat on you as you tried to make a phone call. We're cool now, right?
And the worst one is the new girl who was in the house for like 5 minutes and just like put her finger in the wind to see where the prevailing winds were blowing and was like, yeah, I hate Parisa too for no good reason but that everybody else did.
Yeah.
And then it's like, I'll spit on the phone booth because everyone else is. What a clown.
And I love that.
And that lunatic who, you know, he decides to throw things away with his girlfriend and make out with her or whatever, and then has the other genius move of calling the girlfriend to tell her about it, but not really, from Australia.
Well, I think they did more than make out, John.
Well, I was trying to clean it up in case any kids were listening. But,
You know the one thing that this...
You think if I was more explicit, we'd get that number one ranking? Is there still
I think maybe we would have pushed past NPR. You know, the one thing that bugs me is that they didn't have the annual scene where the guy who hooked up with the female roommate and then her boyfriend shows up for a weekend and they have to play pool with each other.
Yeah.
I just feel like that's a staple. It's almost like I don't know. I mean, it's like the seventh inning stretch. Well, it's like the seventh inning stretch. It's tradition. And for some reason, we were robbed of that this year, which I was upset about.
Well, after he hooked up with the new girl, maybe MTV is like, can we fly his girlfriend in? Is there still time for that? How about your flight from Mississippi to Sydney, you know?
Yeah, I love the whole, I'm not going to do anything with you, but we're going to cuddle in bed every night. We're going to spoon, but that's not cheating.
Right, and that won't lead anywhere. That'll be fine. I'm sure your girlfriend watching the TV doesn't mind that you're just cuddling with the girl every night. She'll be fine with that.
You know, it's funny is to watch this now from an older and detached perspective because when we were in college, I was doing all of these same things and making the same justifications.
Right.
We had the if she's more than an hour away, it's not cheating.
Exactly. That works.
I think I created that one.
I think so. It was either you or Bill Clinton. I'm not sure which one.
Let me ask you, though. Are we too old to be watching The Real World? We're both like hitting our late 30s soon. Is there a rule that once you are double the age of one of the cast members, you have to stop watching?
In all likelihood, it is a little creepy, and something tells me that MTV is not really, that's not the prime demographic they're looking for, 37, 38-year-old men.
37-year-old engaged men?
Based on the commercials, I don't think they're really shooting for our generation. But
well, here's the problem. You and I were on this Real World thing from the get-go,
from the
first season. And to me, it's the defining reality franchise, and I don't see why I have to turn my back on it because I'm older and wiser.
Oh, I'm not killing you, my friend. I'm right there watching it with you. And I have other friends that are the same age that are doing the same thing.
Okay, so I shouldn't feel guilty.
No, I think we're all right. It's not like you're watching Hannah Montana. That would be a little creepy, but, you know, and there wasn't a kid around, so I think The Real World is okay.
Yeah, if you're watching Hannah Montana and there's not a kid around, it's like going into Chuck E. Cheese and ordering a burger by yourself.
That's exactly right.
There's just something immediately wrong with it.
That's exactly right.
Who were you ultimately rooting for in the Parisa-Trisha feud? Like, if you had to choose one.
Gun to my head?
Gun to your head.
This is a shocking answer, but Parisa. I just thought that Trisha girl was awful.
Yeah,
I think Parisa is easy to play the victim and like is awful in her own way. But Trisha was really just like I could see if I lived in a house with her, I would just hate her.
She, you know, it's really tough to make a statement like this. I really have to think about it. But off the top of my head, I can't think of a worse person who's ever been on one of these shows
than Trisha.
Like somebody who had less redeeming character traits than her. I don't think she had a single redeeming trait.
Yeah, well, she was kind of cute.
Well, I'm talking about personality.
All right, that was good. Well, that's a trait, a physical trait. But,
she's one of those people that if you added 75 pounds to and bruised her up a little so that she wasn't as pretty, she would have been murdered. Like, a classic example of somebody who could get away with stuff because of their looks, but she was really like, how do you find somebody who's that awful of a person and put them on a show?
I don't know. That's what MTV was hoping for. They figure we'll throw this awful person in the mix and just let their adventures ensue.
Yeah.
Remember the idea we had years ago of they should have a Real World house of just all the people who've been kicked out of houses? How perfect would she be in that with like her and Puck?
Throw them in together?
Yeah. I mean, how great would that be? Just get a house full of people that were thrown out. Now tell me people aren't going to tune in for that.
Yeah, that would be good. Well, on this week's show, we made Real World history because they only introduced the bedroom camera a couple years ago.
Mm.
But in this upcoming...
Oh, yeah.
In this upcoming show, there's
tonight,
a clip,
in fact.
There's a live-action shot of I think what's-her-face is on top of the guy,
Kahuta.
Kellyanne's on top of Kahuta. And then in captions, you see, uh-oh, I think the condom broke.
Yeah, yeah.
First of all, how is this show on TV?
Right.
Like on cable TV where my kids could see something like that.
I wish I could watch it with her parents.
But did you ever think when we were...
You didn't like that one, Kellyanne?
No, it's... Well, we always had that joke about how they should... On the DVD, there should be another feature where you get to watch just the parents' reactions watching their girls in the show.
Her father's eyes roll back in his head, you know?
It's just like, oh, it's everybody's worst nightmare.
She should be like, Dad, you might want to have some paramedics standing by for tonight's episode, you know?
But I think if I had told you, I don't know, 10, 12 years ago, that there would be the real world, A, would have bedroom cameras, and B would have a, I think the condom broke episode. I don't think we would have believed that.
It's crazy where society's heading. I don't know where it can go from here. Like, what are they going to show next? Like, where can it go from here?
Nudity, I think, is the next step.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, I think someday we'll just turn on TV and it will just be, like, outright pornography. And we won't even blink an eye.
The Spike Channel will be on basic cable.
You'll be, like, watching it with your kids and be like, no, there was a time when you couldn't see full-on nudity on CBS, you know?
Well, you know, the Jackie Robinson of this whole thing was really the girl in Miami who had the threesome in the shower in the middle of Miami.
She was a trailblazer. Let's hope someday she gets her recognition, a lifetime Emmy achievement from the Emmys or something, you know?
Well, because I remember when that happened, I think we had a 90-minute phone call afterwards rehashing everything and just, like, it was like seeing Babe Ruth call a shot. Like, it was on that level of a TV moment.
It was breaking, is what it was, yeah.
And now that would be mundane. I wouldn't even bat an eyelash.
Now
I didn't
that
think
happens
I'd pick up the phone.
Now they're, like, in the house 5 minutes and that happens, so you don't even blink an eye.
Yeah. Yeah, And also, it was funny when they said the other day, hey, it's the first time we've all been in the hot tub together.
Yeah.
Gotta love the real world. You know what? Screw it. I'm not going to apologize, and I'm going to keep watching it.
Here.
Johnny, I'm going to let you go. As always, it was a pleasure. Worst of luck with the Johan sweepstakes, and we'll talk to you soon.
As to you too, my friend.
So I get to sign off. Whoa.
Thank you for downloading the BS Report with Bill Simmons.
Too much fun.
Check out more podcasts at the iTunes Music Store or at Podcenter at ESPNRadio.com.
Peace out.